Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for July the 2nd, 2021. This is episode number 65. Our top stories today: Volvo Recharge concept revealed, GM invests in a low-cost U.S. lithium project, and the VW ID. Buzz test mule has been spotted. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the always fashionable Tom Malogny, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Malogny. We also have Mr. Suave Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And perhaps Mr. Kyle Connor will join us from Autospec Studios. He puts together the virtuosic videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. So welcome, everybody. Let's kick it off by talking about what's been charging in our driveways this week. So Tom, I don't believe you have anything this week. Kyle has been spotted cruising around in the Karma GS6L. So we're kind of hoping he pops in and tells us about it. But Martin, you, as you have had for the last couple weeks, are in the Hyundai Kona Electric. And this week you've managed to do a range test of sorts.
Yeah, and I want to know from you whether you think this was a happy fail or not. Let me explain. So this is the new 2021 Kona. So a few improvements they've made to it, and taking the heat pump out, for instance. I don't know if you can option it back in. There's certainly a big space where it was in the old one. It's not under the hood of this one. So Kyle did his at night. It was cold. And Tom, yours was slightly warmer. So I figured that I was going to shoot some video at a new charging station that is got a bunch of Ionity 350 kilowatt units and some other ones from a new company called GridServe, who've bought our national network, still called Electric Highway. So I plan to go 244 miles. I figure I would run in with a few miles spare. I don't really want to go down to zero. I mean, Kyle was driving this thing around his track until he's flapping the accelerator pedal and it's not doing anything and he's pushing it into the garage. I get no pleasure out of that. So I get pleasure watching it, but not doing it myself. So, you know, because I was going to be a few hundred miles from home. I pulled in after driving for 241 miles in the Kona at with the cruise set to 72 miles an hour, which is 70 GPS, with 15% remaining and 40 miles indicated left. So that would be, if you add those two together, 281.
Miles.
And if you look at the, you know, 85, using 85% of the battery to go that far, that does work out at 280 odd miles. Now, a couple of things to introduce into the equation. Firstly, the last 10 or 15% of a battery pack, as the voltage goes down, isn't necessarily linear. So, you know, newcomers to the podcast, you know, you might, they might say 20 miles remaining. You might drive 10 miles and you might not necessarily have 10 miles at the end of that because the battery pack at the low state of charge doesn't necessarily go down like that. The other thing is, in the first hour of the drive, it took me, in the first hour, I went 50 miles because I'm getting away from the coast where I live and there was lots of traffic. So the first hour was an average of 50 miles an hour. It was stop start as well on the motorway. Oh, you know, tourists are leaving after their week away at the beach. So a few things. Temperature, 20 degrees ambient, really nice day yesterday. So I didn't need air conditioning for much of it. So it was on driver only fan just to have some air circulation. So no two range tests are the same, but it was almost a happy fail because I pulled in with far too much charge than I wanted. And again, if I was doing a range test, I would have gone up and down the motorway, junction after junction, and just pulled in at a low. But I had to do some filming at the charging station. So in a way, it almost doesn't count. But in a way, it's a great result for the new year Kona because that's a great, great mileage to do. 280 miles is just brilliant, right?
Right, and highway speed too, right? Like we say, our forum has a good size Kona Electric community, and they regularly report, you know, getting over 300, 320 whatever miles on a charge. But I mean, that's not at 70 miles an hour, of course, but in daily driving situations.
Look, the car coped brilliantly. I stuck it at, say, 72 on the adaptive cruise, which is 70 GPS in this car, and let it do its thing. So there's a setting. So there's three different follow distances, and I have it set as the shortest distance, because even then it still feels pretty safe. I'm paying attention. And then in the menus of the Kona as well, there is an aggressiveness session for how quick section of how quickly you get back up to speed when the car you're following accelerates away. And I have that set to the most aggressive. So again, if you were doing a range test where you're really going to eke out every last bit of battery, you'd accelerate manually, you'd feather the throttle, you'd just eke out that energy from the battery pack. But I left it. This was the car. It was completely in highway driving assist. So it was steering itself and it was driving itself. And I just let it was in cruise control. So I wasn't going out of my way to get a good result. The aircon wasn't on for much of it because it was just a very mild day here. What do you think? I did not expect 281. It just seems too much.
Well, you know, yeah, it's worth it. It's not, as you said, you know, was it a waste of time? Definitely not. Every range test is different. When Kyle and I do them for Inside EVs, we try to maintain that 70 miles an hour the entire time because we need to compare it against the other cars that we do. So to drive in a fashion that you did where, you know, you're limited in traffic for a while to 50 miles an hour, then you're up to 70. And then if you start doing that, then it's worthless to compare to the other range tests. So in that regard, you'd say that, you know, you couldn't use this to compare it to another vehicle, but it gives potential Kona owners valuable information on what they can expect in the real world when they're in an area that they're going to be limited by their speed's going to be limited by traffic for a while, that the vehicle can go that far. In a way, it's better than what Kyle and I do because it's kind of unrealistic to think that somebody's going to get in a car at 100% charge and drive it for 3.5-4 hours at 70 miles an hour and not slow down and not speed up. But that's what we do because we have to be able to have that some kind of benchmark to compare all the vehicles. So in some regards, what you did, Martin, is more realistic than what we do. So yeah, I think that's great. And it's fantastic that it went that far. As you said, Kyle and I did, I think there were 2020 model years and we were right around the 236, 238 miles. And that's at a constant 70 miles an hour. Now, when I say constant, even we fall prey to occasional slowdowns. But like, for instance, if I'm driving along at 70 miles an hour and I have to lower my speed because there's traffic to 68 or 65 for a mile or two, then I go 72, 73 miles an hour for a mile or two to try to make up for it. And but yeah, what you did is definitely worth it, in my opinion.
Cool. Well, I was really impressed with the car. It did really well. And actually, the efficiency actually increased. So after that first hour, where I was going a little bit slower in traffic, and it was 4.1 miles per kilowatt hour, then over the next 3 hours, it then increased. And it ended up just flicking between 4.3 and 4.4. So we'll call it 4.3, an error on the side of caution. And I ended up pulling in at 4.3 miles per kilowatt hour, which again is really, really good efficiency. And from some of the, you know, early drives and I mean, none of these are official, but things that you've seen on YouTube of people sticking cameras inside the IONIQ 5, I think Hyundai have really got to make sure that their new cars, the IONIQ and the Kia EV6, aren't actually worse at the beginning than the Kona isn't outgoing. Don't get me wrong. If you just bought one, you've bought a great car. But that at the minute, they're smashing it with that car.
Absolutely. And other than Tesla, we always point this out. Hyundai has nailed it with the efficiency. Both the IONIQ and the Kona that we drove, the IONIQ even more so, the original IONIQ that's still available. It's an incredibly efficient vehicle. You know, it was at the time, it was the only car other than Tesla that when we did the range test that actually exceeded its EPA range rating when we drove it at a constant 70 miles an hour. Now that's fantastic that it did that. But you know, yeah, I'm that's one of the things I'm really interested in seeing is, okay, they've got this charging thing down. We see the IONIQ 5, 10 to 80% in 18 minutes. So that's fantastic. But is it still as efficient as Hyundai has gotten known for being with their electric vehicles? I hope so, because, you know, it seemed like none of the other OEMs, and there's some fantastic cars out there, the ID4, the Mach-E, you know, Polestar, really enjoy driving, but none of them could come close to what Tesla had done efficiency-wise. But Hyundai was. Hyundai was making cars that were incredibly efficient, and I hope that they're not slipping back with that.
This model that I've got, I wonder if they've changed anything significant versus the old model, or whether it was just a case of it's a brand new car. Although a lot of the press cars you have don't have crazy miles on, so you know, this is just ticked over 1,000 miles. You know, I'm just my personality type. I was chatting to Dom last night on message. I'm kind of tempted to go out on Sunday morning when the tourists are all in bed, and just go up and down the motorway near where I live, and do it as you guys do it, just to almost double check the numbers. I think the only downside of that car, it's a great road tripper, the Kona, if you're thinking of buying it. The only downside I think would be the charge speed. So I pulled in at 15% remaining, plugged into a 120 kilowatt ABB unit, which is, you know, brand new, which is what I was there to go and shoot. And it ramped to 64 kilowatts and it held it, didn't move at all until, go ahead.
64, that's it.
That's it. Well, because I didn't arrive at a low enough state of charge to go into the 70s. And it got to 64 and it stayed there absolutely rock solid until 61% state of charge. And then it went down to 55, at which point I unplugged and carried on. So that's the, you know, if you're talking about hardcore road tripping, the efficiency's up there, but equally the charging isn't spectacular. But even then I was done in less than, you know, I'd added 150 miles in half an hour, which got me home. So, yeah, that's the only thing to consider if you're thinking about buying one of these for serious road tripping. For the occasional trip to family, if you've got charging en route, even if you've only got 100 kilowatt units, whatever, then this would be a great choice.
I think you're going to have to head out maybe at like 4 a.m. when the streets are like totally clear and everyone's sleeping, you know?
I think so, you know, because that bit from where my house to the motorway, it is tourist central by the beach. So I might have to do that. I might set my alarm early. If I do it, I'll let you know.
Or if you really want to do it properly, you know, when Kyle and I start our range tests, we don't start at our house, Martin, because we go through the same problem that you do. You know, the getting out to the motorway can be difficult. And then even sometimes that initial part of the highway could be jammed up. So I'll leave my house at 100% charge and I'll drive 20 or 30 miles. To a DC fast charger where I know it's right on the highway. And then I'll fully recharge it to 100% and then hop out on the highway. And at that point, the highway's moving, you know, at 70 miles an hour. So I literally go right out onto the highway and start 70 miles an hour. If I started from my house, I'd be driving the first 10 or 15 miles at speeds under 70 miles an hour. And that wouldn't work. So, you know, and you know, a lot of people don't realize how much work goes into these 70 mile an hour range tests for me. Because, you know, like I said, first of all, drive out, fully recharge. I'm an hour and a half into this before I start the range test, you know, before I'm fully charged. Now I'm back out onto the highway. And then I have to figure out where the charging stations are and how I can drive in loops so that I end up right as I'm getting to 0% state of charge. So I'm constantly calculating while the range test is going on. You know, Kyle has an advantage when he's in North Carolina, he can finish up at the track. And like you said, drive around the track, but I'm on public roads and I have to, sometimes I actually have to pull over and stop for 5 minutes and really calculate, okay, if I go to that exit, it's 10 miles. I can circle around, drive to the exit, that's 25 miles up, circle around, come back. I should be pulling up right at the right time. Surprisingly, I've never run out. The last range test we did with the Polestar 2 was the closest I ever came. It started going into reduced power mode when I'm on the highway. I couldn't even maintain highway speeds. It was the first time that I was actually like a little scared while I was driving because the thing's slowing down. There was nowhere for me to pull over, but I was able to get off. And that gives a great segue. Dominic was asking what's charging up in your driveway earlier, and he jumped over me because I don't have any new electric vehicles this week, at least. But what I do have, and I mentioned a few weeks earlier that I was going to be getting, was that mobile charging unit from Spark Charge. And that arrived, and I just started using it now, and I'm going to be incorporating it in, on these highway range tests. And that's a mobile DC fast charger so that I can drive the range tests until the car won't go any further and just slows down and pulls off on the side of the road. And then I'll have a support truck come. One of my friends will be driving it with this mobile Spark Charge unit, and I'll be able to recharge the car right out there on the highway. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm going to be making an introductory video on this unit this week, actually. I'll have it up on Inside EVs just to explain what it does and how it works. And then hopefully within the next week or so, I'm going to get a Model Y or a short, a standard range plus Model 3. I think I have one of those lined up soon because we haven't done the range test on that, and do it until the thing just slows down and I'll pull off the side of the road. And then we'll plug in the Spark Charge roadside to add some juice so I can get to a proper supercharger.
Hey, speaking of cars coming, do we have a Plaid coming soon? Do you know?
I know quite a few of us have friends that have promised them. I have a friend that's getting one. I don't have a delivery yet. I actually have a friend that's getting a Model X Plaid also. So, you know, but we don't have any firm dates that I know of, though.
Okay.
Can we just have a quick look at how many of those were delivered? Because they've just Eric's just posted an article online with all the production and delivery numbers, and it's for the S and the X. It's a bit higher than I thought. Let me put this up for you, and you can see what he's done.
Right. They before it went on the air, Elon Musk tweeted out, you know, that they produced over or delivered over 200,000 cars this quarter, the second quarter of 2021. And so if you go to Inside EVs, we have the breakdown there. There is from zero in the first quarter, they went to 2,340 produced Model S's. Those are mostly, I guess, the Plaid Model S's, probably some long range in there as well. And they've delivered 1,890 of those, one of which went up in flames this week. We're not exactly sure why, but that was kind of not a great start to things, but... and we'll probably hear more about that. Apparently, the owner of that car is a high profile executive, maybe involved in the sports world. We're not really sure, but he's got some high power lawyers on the side. So that story is probably going to pop up in our news at some point. But anyway, back to the delivery numbers. Yeah, what do you think of these, Martin?
You know, a new record. Again, it's another record, and it's great because they've had the same headwinds with semiconductor shortages as the entire, you know, industry, and every industry, it seems, is suffering with this. And we knew they were putting cars aside. They'd made the cars and they were putting them aside because there was a part they couldn't finish. Now, that could be a clip for the sun visor, or it could have been the, you know, ECU. So we don't know what that was, but they were building cars and storing them. And we didn't know how many people we're going to get the S and the X, or the split between, you know, Plaid and long range, and even the split between S and X, we never find out. But I was really interested in that number because, was it 25? What was that? 25 handed over on the delivery?
Yeah, they only did a 25 unit handover on the thing just a few weeks ago, but they've, you know, delivered since then 1,890 cars.
You know, that was I think I said last week or the week before on the podcast, if it gets to the end of the quarter and they've delivered 25, it was going to be a real problem,
right?
Because these were clearly hand built cars for staff and a few high profile influencers who are part of the club. But that's not the case at all. And I'm so pleased to see, okay, like, if you want to just say, well, it's less than 2,000 cars, then yes, you can do that. And you can be critical. You can be critical of everything. But I think in terms of it being a new car, with a lot of improvements, a couple of thousand cars is really, really good. So, but of course, that's not where their business is. Their business is in scale, and their business is in the well over 200,000 threes and Ys that they've produced and delivered. So another fantastic result. And they just keep leading the way. And I think there's been some negative sentiment around Tesla, some of it from China, some of it to do with, you know, Elon Musk's fascination with cryptocurrency and how he can be a little bit wayward on Twitter at times. Oh, and there's just been a little an undercurrent of something around the company. And so it's just great that they can get back to talking about electric cars, which is, hey, we made a lot of them. And again, it keeps everyone on. We need a strong Tesla because it keeps everyone else honest.
Because
the job's not done, right? Those early delivery numbers of great cars like Mustang Mach-E, ID4 in the US at least are good without being eye-wateringly good. So we need a strong Tesla to move everybody else on and just to keep them honest. And so great, I think a great result personally.
Well, I think it's easy to say that they're producing or they're selling just as many cars as they can possibly produce. Like Jason Leiter, one of our viewers here, mentioned in YouTube that he's got a Model Y on order. He ordered it May the 8th, and the estimated delivery date is late July, early August. So they're backed up. There were rumors actually that a Q3 has already sold out their production. So man, they need that those gigafactories in Berlin and Texas up and running, man. And we'll see. That'd be interesting to see exactly if they can catch up with the demand with those things online. But yeah, Tom, did you have anything to add to that?
No, I just echo what Martin said. I think it's fantastic. I really and we mentioned this on the podcast that one of the things I found most interesting after the 25 Model S's were handed over was how this was going to ramp up. We know Tesla has kind of in the past, but early on, admittedly, have done these, ceremonial handovers. And then it's like, okay, 3 months later, there's still just 200 cars delivered. How quickly were they going to ramp up? And seeing that it's almost 2,000 vehicles in a few weeks means that, you know, they're pumping these things out, and that's great. You know, it's not like, you know, they just hand built 25 to silence people. And then they're still 3 months away. No, these things are rolling off the line every day. And that's good to see.
Right. And you can see the influence of the Gigafactory in China in these numbers. Last year's Q2, they produced 90,891 vehicles. This year, 201,000 or deliveries, I guess, 201,250. So, you know, well over, it was 120%, you say, Martin?
120-something% year right. on year. On a COVID year. Okay, China came out of the restrictions earlier than the rest of the world. They got it earlier. And I know that the US, so of course, they're making cars in both Shanghai and Fremont are not under the same restrictions that we have here in Europe. But still really impressive because they are a global player and they are relying on, you know, the parts come from a global supply chain. And so, like, that's really impressive. You know, building a car is fabulously complex and, you know, you rely on all of those bits arriving just in time to be assembled and then out the door to the customers. And it doesn't take much to break everything. Given the supply chain issues around the world and the semiconductor issues, just brilliant.
Mm-hmm. There's a comment here. I know it jumps the topic a little bit from Pepperidge Cookies. EVgo swap CHAdeMO to Tesla connector. I haven't seen that. If you've seen a station like that, shoot us a picture. What we've seen is that EVgo has added a Tesla connector on the CHAdeMO side. So, they still have the CHAdeMO connector, but they've also added a Tesla connector. But if you've seen stations that have totally dropped CHAdeMO and just has a Tesla and a CCS connector, please shoot us a picture of that because I'd be interested in seeing that.
Right. Hey, so want to move on to some other news. So let's see, Volvo is our big headline, but before we do that, I wanted to talk about this this thing with General Motors investing in a low-cost California lithium project. So this just popped up yesterday, and the embargo came down this morning. So we just published this early this morning, but I spent a lot of time yesterday like kind of looking into this and researching it. And actually was on a call with another company who have a big similar kind of lithium play in Arkansas with similar amounts of first stage kind of yield numbers. So General Motors has made a multi-million dollar investment in a lithium extraction operation being developed by Controlled Thermal Resources. It's called Hell's Kitchen Lithium and Power, And the idea is to secure a low-cost domestic supply of lithium for the automaker's Ultium battery cells. So right now, a lot of the lithium comes in from South America, Chile, Argentina, Bolivia, or Australia. Maybe I think China has some as well. But this would, you know, really be a big boost to our domestic production. Previously, a lot of people said that, you know, we don't have enough lithium. And more recently, I mean, there's a lot of talk about environmental concerns with mining lithium. So this particular play is interesting because it kind of, so you don't have to, we don't have to worry about supply. I think that's kind of in the past now. There might be supply chokes. We might not be able to get enough supply. There might be like a lot of demand and get, I mean, the stuff is there, but it takes a while to get out of the ground or out of the water in this case. But the environmental part of it is this project could overcome a lot of that. So it's being extracted from a brine in a geothermal wells. So it's in the Imperial Valley of California. And so let me see, I'm scrolling down. So it's a closed loop system. The brine is pumped out of the earth. The steam is kind of let off. We have a little animation on our site. If you look up the article from CTR Clean Energy. So the water is pumped up out of the ground. The steam from that hot water is then used to generate electricity, power, renewable energy. And then the brine solution itself is has the lithium extracted from it. And then all that water is returned back to the earth again. So it's closed loop. There's not the, so the extraction methods on the salt plains in South America, they have these big evaporation things, and it takes a lot of water. They pump a lot of water and it just kind of evaporates in the air, and it's not, you know, not great. Better than oil fields, you know, better than what they do in Canada, where they dig up half the prairie and for oil. But so anyway, this is returned all back into the earth, and it's relatively clean. There's no tailings like you would get with hard rock mining. There is probably going to be some amount of tailings because you take lithium out of the ground. It's lithium, was it hydroxide possibly, or there's a couple different kinds of lithium, and both kinds are used in batteries, but sometimes they have to go through a leaching or a process with hydrochloric acid to get it to switch to the other form, and also a lot of heat. So that's the other portion of this. When you make lithium and other places, battery grade lithium, you have to heat it up. It's like over 1,000 degrees Celsius sometimes for some of these processes. It takes a lot of energy. So this play uses energy that is from its own source, from right there on the ground. It produces its own energy to create the heat, to do all these this processing. So it's pretty great. So they say that, they didn't say how much money they're in. It's just a multi-million dollar amount. They're not saying how much this play in California. They were saying it's going to cost them to develop it. Right now, they're just doing an early testing, and it's a kind of a similar size, I believe. They were talking about $750 million, so $750 million to get it up and running. I don't think GM put nearly that amount in here. But if I were to guess, I would say 25 to 100 million, but they're not saying. But that's speculation. They expect that CTR expects that this project will produce maybe 20,000 metric tons of lithium hydroxide per year in its first stage. That's beginning in 2024. I believe they want to produce electricity before that. And so 20,000 metric tons of lithium hydroxide. If each car, each electric car uses about 10 kilograms of lithium, and estimates vary about that, within its battery cells for its car, that could be enough for maybe 2 million vehicles right at the the first stage of the project. And they expect that to kick up to as high as 300,000 vehicles. So somebody do my math, 300,000, 20,000, that's 15 times that. So 15 times 2 is 30 million vehicles. Wow. That sounds like a lot. And that's probably, I don't know how conservative that 10 kilograms of lithium, because like I said, there's estimates on the internet about how much lithium goes into a battery, and it's pretty, there's a lot of variance there. But that's just, I mean, that's just this one play. So this other play in Arkansas is of a similar size. So I and then there's other hard rock and other sort of lithium deposits around the country that other people are developing. So I think it's safe to say that we don't have to worry about lithium supply so much, but it's like getting out of the ground in a clean and using renewable energy to do the processing and everything like that. So I'm really excited about this. It sounds almost a little bit too good to be true. And so I asked the GM about that. And so they were saying that it is maturity in high volume production still has to be proven out with this form of lithium extraction. So, but it believes the technology has a lot of potential. I guess they have enough confidence in it that they've put millions of dollars into it. So I don't know. So I've rambled on for quite a bit about this. What do you guys think?
Well, I've always maintained that once the demand for electric vehicles and batteries increases, that the market will figure out how to get the lithium and how to get it in environmentally friendly fashions without really knowing or predicting how it was going to happen. So seeing a process like this being developed on certainly does not surprise me. And I hope that it ends up being something that works. You know, it's still, as you said, in the testing phases, and it's above my pay grade and my pay grade engineering wise to look at it and tell you if it's going to work or not.
Right.
But I suspect that there's other projects out there similar to this that are maybe in the earlier stages or maybe in stealth mode, because there's going to be so much demand for lithium that, you know, once and companies understand that once the demand is there, then, you know, private enterprise is going to figure out a way to supply to get the supply up. So, you know, it's going to happen. And hopefully we find environmentally friendly ways of doing it so that we can, you know, the production of electric vehicles, the environmental impact becomes less and less problematic.
Right. This play in Arkansas, I was mentioning, that's being developed by a company called Galvanic Energy. It has, I believe it's a geothermal brine as well, but they're not talking about producing energy with it. Geothermal energy has been, it's a lot trickier to do than what it sounds. You know, there's a lot of geothermal potential everywhere, but there's not been a lot of development because I remember looking into it like a decade ago or so, and there was a lot of problems actually trying to do it. Like the idea is there, you know, they understand the concept, how it all works, but then, you know, things go wrong when you actually try to do it. There's, you know, the things you have to overcome, things they have to engineer their way out of it. So, you know, it's not a given yet that this is going to work, but this play in Arkansas, I just want to mention. So the one in California has energy as a revenue stream. And I believe they also have some, rare earths involved in that as well. But the one in Arkansas has a lot of bromine production, and they're already producing bromine and other minerals. Other companies are producing from that field there as well. So I just want to throw that out there. I don't know how excited you get about mining lithium, Martin. But
you know what? Where I see this, because I'm no expert in that area, is I look at the kinds of company making the investments in this. And, you know, Tesla's Battery Day is pretty famous these days. But you know, companies like GM don't traditionally need to run the ruler over the, you know, the books of companies like this. So I'm just excited that EVs are bringing so many changes. Everything is, you know, is new and exciting, and including the kind of investments the car companies are making like this. And also really important, Renault had an event this week, a live streamed event talking about batteries, the Renault 5, the Renault 4, and it's so evident now, just from a couple of years on, how all of these massive car makers are looking at how to be in control of more bits of their supply chain than just going to their suppliers and saying, we want 2 million of that widget, please, and what's the best price you can do? And which is a lot of how cars have been built over the last few decades. And so this is great. And I love the fact that car makers are now look at Ford 12 months ago to 12 months on now with their new management in place going literally a 180 from being, we are never going to build our own batteries because we'll go to the market and the market will fix it. You know, and a year on, Ford's saying, okay, right, let's, you know, we need to be in control because without batteries, there's no EVs. Without the raw materials, there's no batteries. And so I love it. It's all above me. I don't understand a lot of it, but I love what it means, which is these companies are thinking about, you know, 2 million vehicles, 20 million vehicles, and to ensure that that happens and to make sure that, you know, they're fit for the future.
Right. So let's move on. So on Wednesday, Volvo held its first tech moment. That was a presentation. It lasted over 2.5 hours, and it basically laid out how the automaker intends over the next decade to achieve its ambitious goal of offering only electric vehicles as early as 2030. Included in this overarching target are goals of achieving some amount of autonomous driving ability, at least under some limiting conditions, and producing all of its software in-house, and also the safest Volvos ever, because, of course, the Volvo is known for their safety. So if you watch the presentation, they spent about the first half of it or so talking about these things. And it's interesting enough, if you're a Volvo fan, for us and maybe for you, the more interesting part, I think, is around the vehicle and the electric drivetrain technology. So first of all, let's talk about the concept, recharge concept. They, Martin just had it up on the screen here a second ago. They say, there it is. It looks so good. So they say it represents a manifesto for the all-electric future of Volvo cars. So like most EV designs we've seen lately, the battery is in the floor between the axles. It's a flat floor. Gives it a flat floor. The wheels are pushed out to the corners. It has very short overhangs front and rear. And there's, you know, a lot of passenger space inside. It still looks very much like a Volvo. And it kind of walks the line, I think, between an SUV and a station wagon, which is pretty sweet. It's got a high belt line, but a low roof, which is kind of nice it helps you get range. The less area you have to push out of the way when you're going on the highway, you know, the more range you can get for any given amount of battery. So my favorite part may be the Thor's Hammer daytime running lights. They open up, and so that they kind of split apart, and the headlights pop out when they're activated. I don't, Martin, maybe you can play that clip in the post. I believe it's the second one down the page. It's about 17 seconds in. Yeah, just there. Okay, let's just watch the animation to the front. Yeah, so there's your Thor's Hammer running lights. And then watch this headlight trick. What? Open up. Turn on your lights. If you're watching this,
that looks cool.
Right?
I like that. That's nice.
Okay. So if you're watching or if you're listening to this on one of our podcast platforms, you're gonna want to maybe tune in to the YouTube show, or possibly just, you know, look up the post on Inside EVs. We have a few of the videos with the animations of what's going on with the lighting and different things. So that's my favorite part. I think Kyle's favorite part would be the light up Volvo badge with the diagonal bar on the nose. But he's not here to defend himself. So
we had one of a commenter said, I think Simon Matthews said that it looks like the stillborn Dyson car. And he's right. It does.
Oh, really?
It definitely shares the same lines.
Yeah, I mean, but it looks very much like a Volvo, I think.
So, absolutely. The Volvo design language is there, but I'm just, the overall form is very, very, very familiar.
Right. So one thing that does stick out is the LiDAR sensor at the center of the top of the windshield. So they believe that feature will be like synonymous with a safe car, you know, in the future when they start doing this. And that's going to happen pretty soon, actually. So going down to the inside, the interior is very clean. The center touch screen is semi-integrated into the dash, and it's vertical. I believe they said it's 15 inches. So this concept, I don't believe it previews a particular car, as I understand it, but it basically embodies the design ethos. So I don't know, anyone want to say anything about the styling beyond that, besides it looks like a Dyson?
The on screen right now is the Dyson. Well, maybe it's a rendering, but okay. Yeah, that's, as Tom says, like, wow, yeah, that's super similar. you know.
Yeah, I think the Volvo is more upright. Let's see that back to the Volvo. Let's see that D pillar.
Okay, let me bring the Volvo back. Sorry, I'm lots of different screens open. Yeah. And then let's go for the Volvo again.
Yeah, it seems a little more upright, but yeah.
It's certainly striking. They've certainly said the designers, where are you going to put the rear wheels? Oh, at the back, you know, and then a bit further back, and then a bit further back. I mean, it's a long wheelbase. So,
yeah.
You know, lots of room for battery. You know, you can stick the battery.
It's a concept, so you have those big, it looks like, I don't know, 20, at least 22 inches. It could be 24s. I don't know. They're pretty huge.
And coach doors, you know, you're not going to see those.
Yeah.
And no handles,
super thin pillars, of course. Yeah. That's not going to make it to production. But still, it looks good. And Volvo's been, you know, just knocking it out of the park with their designs, you know, I think. So moving along to the drivetrain. So beginning with the XC90, they're moving to the next generation platform next year. Scalable product architecture, SPA 2. I think the one they have now is actually called SPA. So this is going to be SPA 2. So charging. So this battery is the battery in this one is going to be significantly improved, and they expect more range and faster charging. They're not exactly saying how much, but they do say 40% more energy. So if you look at the XC40 Recharge that we have available today, what's that get? In the low 200s, Tom, for...
Yeah, range-wise, I think it's around 220 EPA. Right. And I drove one in the winter, and it was terribly inefficient. Right. You know, I got about 2 miles per kilowatt hour, and I wasn't even driving it hard. So that's the one thing that Volvo needs to work on is their powertrain efficiency. It's terrible. I love the vehicles, the Polestar, the XC40 Recharge, even the Polestar, same powertrain. I love the way they drive. I love the way they feel. The XC40 Recharge, I love the whole package, except for how terribly inefficient it is. And I hate to keep harping on that, but I was shocked at just how bad the efficiency was. And, you know, we get the opportunity to drive all the electric vehicles on the market, and I've never averaged 2 miles per kilowatt hour driving an EV, you know, even in the winter, and not driving it, you know, like a rented mule on a track. You know, this is just driving it normal. So the one thing they need to focus on is powertrain efficiency.
Yes. And so, yeah, I expect that would be coming, but also, you know, a larger battery. So 40% more battery.
You can't just keep killing it with adding kilowatt hours. At some point, because the heavier it gets, now it becomes more inefficient, and you're just fighting that never-ending circle. You've got to improve the efficiency. You could add battery also, but the efficiency has to be improved on. At some point, you know, there's diminishing returns if you just keep making the battery pack bigger and heavier.
Exactly. So they also talked about the third generation coming up. That's going to have I think they were saying around 2025 that's going to come out. So that pack is going to get much better, they say, and probably use solid state cells and be more structural. Like part of the pack is part of the car. The pack is actually the floor of the car. And they're talking about huge range increases, like 600 miles, over 600 miles, 1,000 kilometers of range, which is, I don't know, if you want to tow something, go ahead, because you're going to have all kinds of battery for that. And they'll also be like able to handle 350 kilowatts used on their 800 volt architecture. So 800 volts is coming to Volvo eventually. And those will be also bi-directional charging and vehicle to house ability, possibly vehicle to grid. So they're also talking about the driveline in this presentation. So I found this a little surprising. They said they were going to build all their own drivetrains and vertically integrate, similar to what other automakers are doing. But the thing is, though, Volvo is owned by Geely, so wouldn't it make sense to share components with them and enjoy cost reductions that go with that kind of scale? I don't know. Tom, surely tell me I'm wrong here. How does it make sense for Volvo to make their own motors and inverters?
I find it hard to believe that that's what's going to be the end result. They might, that's marketing speak. You know, they have to share technology, Dom.
Yeah, they've got to have to share something. I mean, you can't be owned by, like, Geely is a huge company.
Exactly.
A bunch of other automakers. And it's, you know, the scale they have is just, you know, you can, brings the prices of so many things down.
Sure. I understand. But they also want to present that image that we're Volvo, you know, we're a prestigious brand. We're going to have all our own in-house technologies. And I think that's probably part of why we got that, you know, from the marketing department. I hate to be so blunt, but I mean, Mark, do you agree with me? Or
that's what it is, because there's no point saying, "Hey, we're going to make these premium Volvos, and they're going to have similar bits inside to the, you know, LEVC London taxi, you know, and they're Chinese brands." Yeah, there's no point saying that. So they want to be Volvo and Swedish and safe and stylish, and that's what. That's what this is about. But there we absolutely be sharing as much. There's no point being part of a bigger company unless you're doing that in an EV world.
Right. So that stuff's all in the future. But we mentioned a minute ago that the all-electric XC90 is coming. So it's coming in 2022. I think you had it up on the screen there for a moment. Outgoing one. But so the XC90 is the company's largest SUV, I believe. And it will likely be called the XC90 Recharge. Go figure. Yep. And so we don't have much in the way of details yet, but it is coming with LiDAR as part of its advanced driver assist system. They call it Highway Pilot. It appears that, like Tesla, it is taking the AI approach and will use its fleet to improve its capabilities. So it's going to be learning on the fly, but the fleet's going to be teaching. Maybe there's going to be mapping, I guess, as well as, I don't know. They didn't get right into the intricacies of the system. The XC90 Recharge will be built at the Ridgeville, North Carolina plant, which they say will be its first to go all electric. So it's going to use that scalable product architecture platform for the XC90 Recharge. And it's also going to be making the Polestar 2 there for the US and the upcoming Polestar 3 performance SUV. So that's pretty nifty.
I think it's a bigger story than many people are giving it credit for. The auto industry does not pursue a build it where you sell it mentality. They build it up slowly. They import cars. You don't come out of the blocks and say, "We're going to make a bunch of electric cars and we're doing it on US soil and we're building factories." It's not how they've done it in the past. And it's really exciting.
I can't help but think part of the reason behind that, Martin, is because of the tariffs that we placed on the Chinese vehicles. I mean, the Polestar 2 now has a 27.5% tariff. It's, you know, which is tremendous. I mean, you think about that, it's raising the cost of the car nearly a third. And of course, the customer pays that, you know, China doesn't pay that. But, you know, it's actually less expensive if you buy this car in Canada than it is in the US. And that it's usually the other way around with vehicles that you pay more if you buy the car in Canada than you do in the US. So, and that's definitely, you know, hurt the sales here. I mean, they were hoping to launch this thing originally at around $50,000 US, and now it starts at $59,900. So, I mean, that's the end result, I think, is that Polestar realized if these tariffs are going to remain in place, we cannot continue to import cars in the US. They just won't sell. They won't be competitive.
Right. Yeah, that's going to really help them, like you say, compete with like Tesla. Or the Polestar 2 should be more competitive, like price wise, with Tesla. It's hard to shell out that kind of money for a car when, you know, it's just not quite as competitive. I mean, but it's a beautiful looking car and it does have its customers and, you know, it's doing okay. But it can.
Dom, I've driven it extensively. You know, I have a Model 3. If you want to go head to head, you know, the driving experience is just as good as my Model 3. In some regards, it's better. So, you know, the Polestar 2 is a great driving vehicle. Right. It's responsive. It handles well. It feels rock solid. It absorbs bumps much better than my Tesla does. It feels like much more of a luxurious car than my Model 3. That said, you know, the price starts at, you know, $60,000. You know, $10,000 more, and the efficiency is terrible. You know, I did the 70 mile an hour highway range test with these two vehicles just weeks apart, and I went 310 miles with my Model 3 and 226 miles with the Polestar 2, and they have the same size battery. 78 kilowatt hour. So, you know, yeah. So think about that, you know, 83 right. miles less. So the efficiency and the price is what's strangling it here. Everything else is, you know, as good as the Model 3 charging isn't quite up to what the Model 3 is, doesn't have that supercharger network, which we've talked about in the past, is just adds so much value to the vehicle. But Volvo Polestar made a dynamite vehicle. It's a great car, the Polestar 2. But you know, it's priced a little bit high for what you get right now, and the efficiency is very poor.
Right. So I wonder if they start building it in, when they build it in North Carolina, if they're going to improve on that at all. Because
they have to figure out a way to make the vehicles more efficient. In my opinion, I think that should be job one for the engineers, the powertrain engineers over at Volvo and Polestar.
Right. Simon Matthew points out that notably Volvo boss Håkan Samuelsson has revealed that the forthcoming large SUV, which will be closely related to the Polestar 3, won't carry the XC90 title. So maybe it won't be the XC90 Recharge after all. Maybe it'll be something more, I don't know, more whatever, more descriptive, more less just numbers. And yeah, so that'd be great, actually.
The problem they've got when giving names that exist already and making an electric version is you are inevitably going to compare and contrast, which is fine if the vehicle stands up, which is why one of the reasons they called it the Ford F-150, because actually it stands up really well on its own against its comparison. It's got a great starting price, et cetera, et cetera. I know some truck fans won't like the range, but in EV world, F-150 was a good result. Give it that famous name. If you are an XC90 buyer, your lease comes to an end, you're walking into that Volvo showroom, and you know, if you haven't got an EV that compares favorably in some way, if it's going to be the same or more money, and there's going to be a range hit, et cetera, et cetera, you're going to just buy the diesel version again on the next lease. So right. There's pros and cons to calling it an XC90.
Right. And range is important. Hey, Tom, you did that little poll on your Twitter the other day. How's that turning out?
Yeah, so actually, I think I'm going to – it was so interesting. We got over 1,200 votes, which is pretty good for a Twitter poll, yeah, or nice. over 1,100 votes, somewhere around there. So, yeah, as I expected, the longer range and longer charging time won out, which, you know, I think so many people are just so focused on range, especially people that maybe don't have a lot of experience driving EVs. But the cool thing about it was it wasn't a crazy blowout. All three choices actually got a decent amount of votes. As you can see up there, Martin pulled it up. The longest range vehicle got almost 42% of the vote, but then we have 35% and 24% down there. It wasn't like the 200-mile range car just got crushed and nobody wanted it. It got, you know, almost a quarter of the votes.
Right.
That was really interesting. Basically, the gist of it was, do you want more range or do you want faster charging time?
For a certain price too. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, the prices were close. I only took off $2,500 for each step down in range because obviously a car that has a 200 mile battery versus the same vehicle with a 300 mile battery, it has to cost less, you know, it's, right. You know, so, ideally I would have liked to not introduce cost to this, but yeah. You have to, because it's
an important part.
I think this was interesting enough to do a post on and then ask the Inside EVs, followers, you know, what their thoughts are.
Yeah. I think people automatically, I mean, range is still king when it comes to electric vehicles, even at 300 miles or, you know, like I chose option number two because, you know, when I think of like long distance trips, my most frequent long distance trip is 200 miles. So 250 miles gives me a little cushion. It's nice. And you know, I'd spend an extra grand or two at that point just to have that cushion and make it, you know, whatever for the luxury of that. And a little bit and decent charging still. The 300 mile one, as you point out, has only 100 kilowatt hours of charging. I'm like, I kind of like the idea of if I need to go far, I kind of like that speed, you know?
But. Yeah. Well, that's how I had to handicap it. And so, some people commented, oh, those numbers don't add up. But the thing is, they can't tell me that they don't add up, that they do or they don't, because the maximum charging speed does not tell you how long the car takes going from 10 to 80%. It's the charging curve. It might only pull those 100 kilowatts for 3 minutes, you know, and then drop down to 70 kilowatt for the rest of the time. So, you know, it does, these are all hypothetical EVs. But the thing here is what I was surprised at, the 50 minutes, 10 to 80% didn't scare more people off than I thought it would. You know, you take a look at an EV that goes 300 miles and takes 50 minutes to go 10 to 80% versus the 200 mile EV that can do that in 20 minutes. You know, I think, you know, I'm more inclined to go for the lower range vehicles that charge that much quicker because for daily use, the 200 miles and 300 miles makes no difference for daily driving because you don't drive more than 200 miles daily. But now on these longer road trips, what I want to do is get in and out of that charging station as quickly as possible. And to be able to get back up to 80% in say 20 minutes after driving 175, 180 miles, let's say it's a 200 mile EV, you know, that to me is more valuable because I'm already driving about 3 hours. And after 3 hours, you know, personally, you know, I'm not Iron Man. I'm not driving eight hours without stopping. After 3 hours, I want to grab a bite to eat, use the restroom, stretch my legs. 20 minutes is perfect to hop back in the car and start another, you know, 100 mile or 150 mile drive. You know, I mean, it depends on the road trip too. If you're driving New York to California, it might be different than if you're driving, you know, New York to Vermont. It's it depends on the road trip.
And honestly, 20 minutes goes by quick. Because it's often if you go into a big where a lot of the big charging stations are, maybe they're just at the end of the car park or something, you're a 3 or 4 minute walk to get through the doors and, you know, past the concessions and the burger stand. You head to the toilets, always at the back. And honestly, if you're on a road trip, 20 minutes goes by like that. And you've been driving for 2-3 hours. You need more of your brain needs more of a rest, and you need to stretch your legs and have a walk around. 20 minutes to charge an EV. I know people they're like, oh, but, you know, putting petrol in costs me 60 seconds. It doesn't, because then you got to pay and you got to. But either way.
It takes a few minutes anyway, like a good three, five minutes. Just like the pouring the petrol part, not the gas.
Yeah, and then you got to queue and pay or do your car. Look, honestly, 20 minutes after driving.
Your way to get there.
It's safe, man. If nothing else, it's safe. Stop and do something else. Move your body for 20 minutes. So, you know, I mean, how much quicker do you want to go than 20 minutes? This was a real, you can see, I think on here, it puts a little tick because it shows that I voted for the middle one as well. So, you know, 250 miles is nice. And then 150 kilowatt charging. I just don't need quicker than I don't do enough road trips. But again, everyone gets their own mileage out of this poll, but I loved it. I really had to think about it though, because it wasn't a slam dunk.
Right.
No.
So speaking of nothing, so the VW ID Buzz test mule has been spotted. Like, this is a pretty exciting vehicle. People have been pretty excited about it. And now we've finally seen maybe it's like the production kind of shell on it, but within camouflage of some kind. I don't know what's going on here exactly. Some people are not impressed, but so here it is. If you're watching this on YouTube or on Twitch, you can see the picture on the screen of the ID Buzz, and it was called that's the Motor One story for it. They were calling it like a production, you know, test mule. So I believe that's the body, but it's got some odd panels on it. There's some lines, like if you look at the if you can find the profile where the windshield meets the hood, it's got an odd like bulldog thing going on. What the heck, man? So I don't know if some of those body panels are not for real. Is that, they're like, what is that?
Yeah, no, that whole front end is wrong. Right. That whole and also it's the van version, which is never going to look good. And if you stick steel wheels or anything, it's going to look trash.
auto writer people are in our writers' rooms, steelies are where it's at, man.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah. You know what? So it's always going to be different to the concept vehicle. But what the heck? That front end is all wrong. That doesn't look right at all. From even just looking at that with your eye, like the way the windscreen comes in, and this is still going to be different.
Right. I think it's much too early to start panicking yet.
Yeah, but I also think Martin brought up a great point, and that was what came out to me. It's the, like the van version with the steel side panels. You know, the Buzz looked so cool because it was glass all the way around, and also the paint. It was that yellow and white, really cool right. paint combination. So, like, that really takes away from it. Of me, like, I think everybody else, when we first looked at it, was like, oh, God, they've killed the ID Buzz. It was such a cool vehicle. But the more I looked at it and said, you know what? Yeah, that front's a little funky. I don't know if that's going to be production. And also, you know, wrap this thing in glass. Give it a really cool paint job like we had pulled up there on the thing. And it's going to give it a totally different look and some cool wheels. So, we knew that this isn't what we were going to get. Well, at least people that are reasonable knew that was not going to be the production ID Buzz. But we got to get a little bit closer to that. And I think just the glass, the wheels, the paint, and if they kind of massage that nose a little bit, I think it's going to be something that most people love.
Oh, we lost Martin. You can still hear me though, right?
I can hear you.
That's great.
I should just drop off now and leave you all by yourself.
Oh, that'd back. Be awesome. I mean, and awesome. By awesome, I mean did. Horrible. Hey, you're back.
Yep, there we go. Oops, yeah. What can you do?
That's all right. So, yeah. So if when you have a chance, can you pull up the shot of the interior? There should be a link to the interior post. We have post with the interior and the exterior because we have a little preview into what that might look like. But if you've seen the exterior photos and you're like panicked, it's, oh no, this is like a disaster. It's still too early to panic.
That's just an ID donor vehicle. So, and it could look like this. It could look like the IDs, but this is an early vehicle. They've taken, right. You know, the bits from the ID3, ID4, popped it into a, you know, their
T6 transporter is what they were using originally. But I'm not sure if this is. But it sounded to me like this. What we were just had up on the screen. That's like the production sort of body, more or less, but with like probably fake panels on it to disguise things up a bit.
Yeah, you would think so. That probably is it might well be the MEB platform. They might have actually made, you know, three or four of these.
Right. But yeah, I'm not sure exactly. I'm not super familiar with it. What is the T6 transporter over
there? Yes. Yeah.
Right. So yeah, we don't get that over here. So we're super familiar with it, but maybe you can say if there's any similarities between that and this mule. But anyway.
Yeah. It looks, I mean, it's lower. And it's definitely different. It's not a transporter with some body bits. It's definitely something they've built.
Okay.
But yeah.
Sweet. So there's a look at the interior shot. And it looks kind of like the ID4 in a way. At least that center screen is like similar to the ID4.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. And that's no bad thing, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. They might have just, you know, ripped it out of the ID4. And this could be like it's been a while since I've been in the ID4. Is that wheel about the same too as the ID4? Looks pretty familiar.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Very similar. Yeah. Right. So, still super early though. So.
Yeah. When's that come out? 2023.
It's 23 in Europe and a 24 model year for the US.
Oh, right.
Oh, geez. You'll get it it's end so of 23. Slow. I know. So build it like now. Build it. Come on, BMW. But they are building it now. Like they've got the platform and they, you know, it's supply. It's supply of batteries. You know, you can sell a ton of ID3s and ID4s. So more than you'll sell this. And then the price has to be competitive as well. Just give it a couple of years and they'll have some flexibility on putting it into the market. You know, they did it now. Look what what's the best example? A Mercedes van. You know, the EQV, 90,000, you know, pounds or £80,000, $90,000. It's like, oh, that's not compelling in any way. So,
Speaking of vehicles that we're really waiting for, John just joined us in the chat and he says he didn't get any pics, but his wife saw some heavily camouflaged Silverado EVs driving there in Michigan. So that's pretty exciting. That's one of the vehicles I'm kind of really looking for. Like everyone is very excited about the Ford F-150 Lightning and for good reason. And, you know, it's a great looking truck and it looks like it's going to be a good value. But I'm really curious what they're going to do with this Silverado EV and how closely it will be in like performance to the Hummer EV, which is like got crazy performance. I was just throwing that out there. I saw it in the chat. So
there you go.
All right. So we also saw videos of the new Porsche Macan EV interior this week. And that's a car that I'm really looking forward to. That's on the new PPE platform, and it's going to be hot. I think Audi has a what's the Audi on the same platform? Do you remember,
Tom? E-tron. Oh,
no,
it's
I'm not
E-tron
sure.
Of some kind.
Yeah, but I don't know exactly which one.
Maybe e-tron 6, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, but this is a Macan, and Macan is like the big one of the big volume vehicles for Porsche. They sell a heck of a lot of Macans in the U.S. right now, and yeah, Macan, Cayenne. Those are the big movers for that company. And I guess that's our first look at the interior.
Taycan, isn't it?
No. Yeah, definitely.
Taycan bits, yeah. And that, again,
that center console does put me in mind of the Taycan a bit, how it's kind of like, you know, kind of wide and flared out at the top.
And the curved driver's display that's recessed in, that's very familiar. It's not the same one, but it has the same style.
Yeah. Right.
Great.
Interesting.
These cars are coming. They're not far away. I saw in the comments, a chap called Orlando says, "What do you guys think of the Aptera?" It's all right. You're late to the party. We've all bunched up a bit. It's all right. Podcast 60 is what you need. Where Dominic talks to the Aptera founders. Look in the archive. Podcast 60 is what you need, and we do a big feature on them. So there you go.
Right. David Black says the Silverado EV will be shown this summer. So that's great. That's summer is like we're deep into it now. 4th of July coming up.
Another good thing to note about the Macan being fully electrified is what I love to see is when the OEMs take their most successful models and fully electrify them. You know, and there's just another case. You know, we've been talking about Ford doing that with their two iconic brands, the Mustang and now the F-150. I mean, you don't get any more Ford than those two vehicles. And now they're both going to be fully electrified. And Porsche now with the Macan, as we mentioned, it's one of their best sellers. So, you know, that's an indication that the company is ready to pivot to electrification when you see them take their best models and electrify them.
Yep.
Right. All right. So the in the UK, we've got some news from the UK for Martin.
Yeah.
Right. You're on top of things. So Nissan has unveiled the EV 360 EV Hub and Envision AESC Gigafactory. So I don't know. How on top of this are you?
I'm on top of it to the point of Nissan had a battery factory. They sold it because they didn't want to be in the battery factory business. Right. Fast forward several years, like all car makers in the world are going, you know what? We should probably be in the battery factory business. We're going to have one. Like, you had one. You
took
ages to sell it and you sold it once. That deal fell through. You sold it again. It's laughable. Look, companies do what they have to do at that point in time to suit shareholders, short-term politics, stakeholders, government. That companies do because they want to free up funds for other investment. Companies do what companies do at that point in time. It is just humorous that if you go to a northeast of England, a place called Sunderland, and it's a big, it's one of the three places the Leaf is made. It's a big industrial area that it's in, and it's literally on one side of the road is the Nissan plant, and it's huge. It's mega, big employer in the area. And the other side of the road, you look the other side, and it's the battery factory they sold off to Envision. It's there. It's all in one place. But like, you know, how many stories have we covered this year talking about car companies going, hey, we're going to have battery factories because we need batteries. So it's a billion. Look, it's a really big deal. Okay. We think it'll be a domino effect. It's £1 billion. I think they're investing. Our prime minister turned up for the announcement of it. It's huge. Hopefully it will encourage others to do the same and invest in local areas to get those battery supplies, wherever that is, not just the UK, but around the world. But they just want certainty. I gather these big companies that are putting big investment in, particularly the UK, is looking at, you know, we've announced 2030 as the end of combustion.
Right.
And I think Tom, I think you have a kind of a saying, or you've said before, you know, at 2359 on New Year's Eve, it doesn't mean that people stop buying petrol, and you know, it's a point in time, but there's going to be a period of adjustment, and people will buy EVs now or in 5 years' time or in, you know, 10 years' time. It just provides certainty that right. Nissan, and I think the government have sweetened the deal by 100 million, you know, and helping out as is always the case. So, you know, great news, fantastic news.
So the deal is, so they already had this factory in Sunderland and then the battery factory across the street. But so now this is them saying they're going to invest $1 billion into this existing setup and just, you know, just redo it for more volume.
Yeah, and of course they've got big sellers, you know, like they've got brands like the Qashqai, and you know the Aria is coming, but they've right. got some big selling cars that are made in Sunderland and around the world that they could choose to go EV. Right. To go on from our previous point about the Macan, if they want to use those nameplates and just put batteries in them, they just need a ton of batteries.
So related to this, then Nissan also teased a new electric crossover based on the Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi Alliance's CMF EV platform. That's the same platform that the Aria is going to be on. This new EV model is going to be designed for global markets. We don't know if all the production is going to happen in Sunderland or, you know, other places as well. But Nissan is investing, you know, $584 million to produce this car in Sunderland with an output of 100,000 units annually. So I know they gave us a few pictures of this. I haven't actually had a chance to spend a whole lot of time on this story. So
I mean, you're probably
miles ahead of me.
Like all teasers, it's a you know, a vague sketch.
Is that the only image they gave
That's
us?
The only one that I saw. Yeah, anyone that saw the Aria Et, the Aria Et, the small version of the Aria. Yeah.
So it's smaller than the Aria?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay, I see. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, good value play.
Yeah. And they've got, again, we talked about Geely earlier, they've got that with Renault, Nissan, Mitsubishi Alliance, three separate companies, but with a huge strength in depth of engineering talent that have been doing this a long time. Nissan had the Leaf, Renault had the Zoe. And
They haven't shared a lot of technology so well, though. You know, like
they need to start doing it.
Like they should have done from the beginning, really, if we're being honest.
They need to start a lot more. And you got the feeling that when Carlos Ghosn was there, it could have gone in that direction.
Right. That's where I think they really wanted it to go.
Yeah. And now, you know, you look at those various bits of that and the kind of, you know, look, we talk about the big shareholders and stakeholders in like Renault is the French government, you know, it's the state. Yeah. And so, and they'll want factories built in France. They are factories built in France with French engineers using French bits. And so all of this comes into play. It's really tough.
That's true. France and Japan are kind of very similar like that. You know, they both have a lot of national pride in their manufacturing and strong, you know, Japanese cars tradition. French cars have a very strong tradition. And, you know, if you're a politician in France, you have to bring home the bacon. You have to, you know, get the pork in your district. It's a big deal. Yeah. All right. So let's move on then. This week, we also saw an awesome looking design from a new company. It's called the E-Legend EL1. And they say just 30 examples will ever be built. I'm just bringing this up because I think it looks like really awesome. So E-Legend was started by a former Volkswagen designer, Markus Holzinger. Apparently, his father was part of the original Audi Quattro design team. And this appears to pay homage to that vehicle. Basic specs, it's got three motors, 90 kilowatt hour battery, 805 horsepower, 2.8 second 0-60, and 249 miles on a charge. Was a bit disappointing considering 90 kilowatt hour battery, but all this for just a little north of $1 million.
I didn't know the price till you said.
yeah, that's the kicker. But it's a carbon fiber, right? It's a monocoque carbon fiber thing. So,
well, good. It'll be lightweight when they ship one to Tom to test. So, if they could, if they're watching, if they could do that, please, that'll be lovely.
So, Tom, the chance of this arriving in 2023 or ever?
Yeah, I don't know about the as good a chance as you're going to get to drive the Rimac.
Ouch. That hurts.
Which I certainly hope happens, because I know it would make your year.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Let's see.
It would make my life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Rimac Nevera. Yeah, this looks great, though. I really love it. But, you know, it's a coupe. Not a whole lot to say about it, except, you know, chances are slim. It's actually going to happen. I mean, I kind of hope it does. It's nice to see like these sort of projects coming. But, man, it's so hard to bring up an EV company unless you have a real real something besides design that you can hang your, you know, company on, like a sort of a technology breakthrough, or like in Aptera's in the Aptera world, they have the whole efficiency ethos, you know, hyper efficiency ethos that, you know, no one else is really matching, along with in-wheel motors and a few other kind of neat technology things. So, you know, new car companies, very hard to see coming together. But yeah, so that's almost all the major news of the week, actually. We might get out of here a little early, a couple of minutes earlier than actually. This is like the time that, you know, we're kind of always supposed to end the show, but we've always been going like 15, 20 minutes later than we're supposed. Kyle's not here to keep us going.
Us on. Yeah. Well, there's one question I'd like to pick up. I see one of the commenters asked, do we know when XPeng and NIO will debut in the US? And no, we don't. But personally, from dealing and talking with both companies, I get the impression that NIO may be the one that gets here first, that okay. might be a higher priority than XPeng. But that's just pure speculation on my part, dealing with both companies. But, you know, I mean, they both obviously view themselves as global brands, and they plan on being all over the world. They're both already shipping some cars to select areas in Europe. The U.S. is a little bit more difficult. But I know they both have it on their product planning, but I would think that just from the experience I had with talking with both companies, seems like NIO views it as a little bit more important to breach the US market than XPeng at this point does. But who knows?
Yeah, originally that was NIO's intention to, you know, be in the US, and they had to, you know, had to put that push that ahead into the future, because for whatever reason, I think probably money, I guess, was an issue. So, but they do still do have that ambition, and when they do get here, it'll be with much better product than that they started with. So,
yeah,
and their product is actually pretty nice. So I can't wait to see what they have in the future.
XPeng already has vehicles in the U.S. for testing. I'm not sure if NIO does.
You've driven.
I've driven one of them, yeah. And from what I understand, I think I'm going to have another opportunity at some point pretty soon.
Oh, sweet.
That should be cool. But you know, that's just, you know, they just wanted to establish, get all their permits and everything to do on road testing and so forth. But I don't think they have plans immediately to bring cars here. And quite honestly, the tariffs are a big problem for both companies. As you could imagine, you know, that's
true.
Nearly 30%, you know, right on the nose, makes it very difficult to compete. And that's the purpose of the tariffs. We put them in place, you know, to help competition, you know,
or to
hurt the competition coming from China. But we don't know if that's going to if they're going to be around, you know, this trade rules are constantly changing. Right. So they might drop that and tax or tariff another industry, or they might even make the tariffs even worse. We don't know, but that's going to have a major influence on when both of these companies enter the US market.
Hey, I wanted to mention as well, we have a new sub forum on the Inside EVs forum. So it's the Honda's EV with GM, in partnership with GM, is officially going to be named the Prologue. So I started a new sub forum on the Inside EVs forum. So if you're curious about that, or you're big on Honda and curious and wanted to see what they, you know, do with the what they call the Ultium architecture, it'll be, you know, it'll probably have its like very strong design. I don't believe the Ultium, I don't think they're, it's not like a frame. It's not like a real platform that they're getting from GM. It's like the battery and the motors and things. I think they also announced that they're going to be doing their own thing. I think, you know, Honda's figured out that they need to have their own architecture and their own.
Yeah, they announced this week that they're building a EV platform for 2025. So after these two GM vehicles for Honda and Acura, yeah, both SUV crossovers, then the next Honda electric, the third one will be. Well, they've got the first one, the Honda E, of course, but then the next one will be on the Honda platform. 2025, I think they were looking at, which is, it's mind-bogglingly late compared to the global auto industry, but...
Except Toyota.
Hey.
Well, I mean, well, I guess, no, Toyota will have its own BZ4X.
Yeah, they're already on the case.
That is coming soon. That's true. I always think, when I think Toyota, I always think, oh, way behind, but they're actually doing things, but they always talk up, you know, hydrogen and other dead-end technologies. But they actually have things coming. It's a matter of the scale and how enthusiastic they are about it. But yeah, it's good to see that Honda is getting with the program as well. Yeah. So anything else we want to mention before we wrap it up?
That's me.
Happy 4th of July, everyone.
Have a great holiday. Yes, we don't. It's one of the holidays you get that we don't. So if you are... charging, if you're queuing for a charging spot or you're heading off, then have a great holiday.
It's also the holiday weekend in Canada. The 1st of July is Canada Day. And so happy Canada Day to all our Canadian viewers. Right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube comment section below or on our Twitch comment section. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching on YouTube or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longney is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor, he's not here today, but
not mentioning him. He's on nothing for this show.
he is on Twitter under he's got a new Twitter handle too. It's Kyle Connor, ITS. Kyle Connor, like you expect. And I'm at Dominic_Y. So click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications if you haven't already. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.